You can find Level Up Language Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lulpodcast. You can also subscribe to the LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Today's episode, we will discuss competency-based education. We'll look at what a basic definition is. How are we looking at it for student advancement or placement, specifically in our world language programs? What does it mean for grades, assessments, and other various aspects of education? We'll also discuss the roles of teachers and parents and students and how those will change or evolve as we shift to a change with competency-based education. With that, let's get into Level Up. Welcome to today's episode of our podcast. Today we'll be talking about competency-based education. We'll go into a definition. We'll discuss various things with competency-based education. I'm your host, Davin Lemke. I'm joined with our regular hosts, Roger Burt, Miles Nance, and Brandon Welker. Today we have two special hosts joining us to help us discuss this topic of competency-based education. One of our guests is Bonnie Flint. She is our supervisor for all secondary world languages. She's also the director of the Confucius Institute at Davis School District. Bonnie has a long history here in the district. Her father was an educator here in the district, right? And Bonnie also taught here for several years before she held her current position at the district. We are also joined by our principal here at Clearfield High School, Principal Chris Keim. Chris started here at Clearfield actually as a high school student, started his teaching career here, and now he's come full circle and is now the man in charge.
You left out star athlete.
He was a star athlete as well. That's true.
I didn't think you could lie on podcasts.
he was an athlete. We'll just say it that way.
We've seen the plaques.
A not very good one.
These are your hosts for the day on this episode. So let's get into competency-based education. Competency-based education means that we measure students' progress and learning against specific standards and criteria. And based on their mastery of that criteria and those standards, then we move them forward to the next class level, et cetera, et cetera. So it goes against our traditional approach that we have now, where we pretty much base everything off of seat time and everything's based off of credits. So as long as the student has been in the class for the amount of time designated and they passed, they get the credit for the class. Although there's still learning going on and we're measuring progress and we're pushing towards mastery, we want to look at competency-based education and how that might be a better platform for students to actually master and develop the skills and content, knowledge, everything that they will need to be more successful, especially where we want them to be more successful after high school, after their K-12 education. That's a basic definition of what competency-based education is. Do we have any comments on what it is, what it looks like, the very basics of it?
Sure. Real fast. So our podcast here is called, or the subtitle is Proficiency-Based Teaching in a World Language Classroom. Just to clear the air here, we are using proficiency and competency almost interchangeably, right? So competency is kind of terminology that the state's using and the district staff using, but we're also using proficiency-based teaching. So we'll talk about those interchangeably.
Yeah, throughout the podcast we will. Yeah, right. Because specifically within our world language, we're looking at proficiency as how well can they use the language? What can they actually do with it? And really that's what competency-based education is. Just so competency-based refers more to all content areas where proficiency, we're more referring to our own world language.
Competency too might be that added piece of how they move on from class to class. Like proficiency is the way we teach, the way that we assess. We care about what they can do and what their abilities are, not just how many assignments they're turning in. Competency-based instruction. Now, when we're talking about it today, we're adding that piece of credit moving on through the grades and how that all ties in. Is that a fair addition to what we've been talking about so far this season?
That would be my understanding.
So I just want to, with Davin, what you were saying, I would modify the word mastery and just switch it for proficiency. As each level, they have proficient levels. They'll never really master a skill or as soon as they've, quote, mastered it, they've learned, they're starting to learn something new, so that mastery is, they aren't quite as good as it anymore because they're trying to do something else, if that makes sense.
Right. I agree.
It's just a word we use in education a lot.
Yeah. Mastery and, often is tied to perfection.
Yeah.
I think that's the automatic stigma that we have. I use mastery interchangeably with proficiency because I look at mastery as the ability to use it in various contexts. It'll never be perfect, but you can succeed in what you're trying to do with whatever it is. That's how I look at mastery personally. But I think you're right. In education, we look at mastery as, can you perfectly do it?
Yeah.
And especially in world language, that will never happen. So right. Yeah, I agree. That's a great qualification.
In the beginning of the season two, we talked about how proficiency is, or the old way we taught is like, if you had a task to drive from here to St. George, like that was your task. The old way would be test them on, tell me what cities are from here to St. George in order. Whereas now it's more like, get to St. George however you can, just show me that you can get to St. George and we'll assess whether or not you arrive at that destination rather than kind of testing the ingredients or the pieces along the way.
Then you can get into things there.
Transition.
With, you know. How many miles did you end up traveling to get there? How many times do you have to stop and fill up? How many times do you have to stop and go to the bathroom? Those would be stops along the way to say how proficient you are.
Right.
And whether or not you should move on.
Let's look at our couple of our bullet points here. Let's start with grading. If we talk about competency-based education, how does that affect our traditional grading practices?
So my experience when I first started with my student teaching, grading was based on a bunch of different assignments that were, I don't even remember at this point how I determined how many points were available and how points scored versus points available was determined. I can't even remember that anymore. But as I started my master's program, I transitioned from that into seeing what proficiency looked like, and I had a whole course on assessment, and that was just incredibly valuable. And so then I started being able to have a little bit of my old assessing or grading techniques in there. But then I was able to see the value of proficiency and include that in there. And then more and more, I started realizing that at least for my practice and my experience, I needed to be more towards the proficiency end because that's where I could see students really improving. And then I remember between my year, I think it was 2 and 3, Bonnie invited me to have a proficiency-based classroom. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that.
There was me and one other teacher.
Okay.
We were at a training and you guys were talking about, you were looking at grades and you were talking about students that progress from one school to another. And as you discuss students and you say, well, this student's an A student or this student's really proficient in Spanish, I should say, but he has a C, or this one's not very proficient. Oh, but he's an A student. And I think the two of you recognized that grading had nothing to do with proficiency at that time. And
right.
So that was sort of a spark and something I was hoping some teachers would recognize, because it's a big game changer when you realize that the way we had been grading really doesn't properly reflect what students can actually do with the language. It might reflect how well they did a crossword puzzle, or if they brought extra credit, maybe a box of Kleenex, or sometimes it's really a game of education, how we've been doing it, how well they play the game. And there are some kids that aren't very proficient, but play the game well. And then there's other kids that are proficient, but they don't like that. And so they don't have the grades that reflect what they can do. And so I think that was really the start of when we were able to really start the conversation district-wide, is when it got down to affecting teachers in their classrooms.
Yeah, so I'm curious, Principal Keim, your perspective as far as, right, that discussion that me and that other teacher had with Bonnie was grades are not necessarily reflecting student ability, which I had grown up with that understanding that that's what they were supposed to mean and be reflective of. So I'm just curious, kind of your take on that whole spectrum, where it was and where it's come and where it should be.
Whenever we undertake to talk about grading as educators, it's a challenge because it touches every part of what we do. And at the heart of it, a grade is a reporting of what a student knows and can do. And I think we'd all agree on that. But until we agree on that and that our fundamental purpose is learning, we have a hard time examining our practices to see if they actually produce what we want. And so when we talk about standards-based grading and how we shift towards that, because I think we would all, again, agree that we want students to grow and learn. That's our purpose. So we have to shift toward really a standards-based grading mindset at first. And that's something that Tom Shimmer said when he was here last summer. We have to have that mindset where we begin to say, what does a grade mean? It has to mean that a student is learning essential skills and knowledge and growing toward those standards. That means we have to clearly identify those standards, what they are. We have to talk in teams about what proficiency looks like, what mastery looks like, whatever terminology we're going to use, and then determine where kids are and see how they grow, see how they progress toward mastery. So that's a lot of it, but it's not just as simple in a department or even in a school talking about grading, because walls go up. We have fiercely defended practices that sometimes in a lot of cases actually aren't good for kids, but we have to talk about it in a way that where we've identified. And I think what we've done here is try to identify what's our fundamental purpose. It's learning. And then we can examine our practices and how to move forward and improve those practices and make adjustments where necessary.
And that's where our conversation started here at Clearfield High School. Roger and I have been here.
I was in my fourth year and you were in your third.
Right. Well, we've had the conversation since we both last year was like, we have to understand where these students are better than we are. And that's why we took this to Bonnie and it exploded from there. But
well, you may remember in a faculty meeting as we've been talking this year about really fundamental basics and things we kind of set that foundation. There was a question or two about, well, shouldn't we be talking about grading and making sure our grading scales are all the same? And our response was, there's a time for that, but we need to talk about what that looks like. We need to start with the basics. What do kids need to know? How do we know when they've learned it? And that's that piece of what's the standard? Mm-hmm. One, those two questions, what's the standard? What's the skill? What does it look like when a student gets it? And how do we identify? How do we make sure we're all assessing that in a really common way so that a kid in my class isn't having a totally different experience than your class? And then what do we do when they get it to move them forward? What do we do when they're struggling? There's no sense talking about a system or a structure until we have the culture in place.
That's funny because as you say that, it just makes me think like that's exactly why our rubrics for the IPA are the ACTFL standards. We just literally copied and pasted from their website, and that's the rubric because that's exactly how we feel as world language educators in the district. We need to understand very clearly what our standards are so that, for example, some wanted rubrics that looked a certain way or that had a certain feel to them, and we thought none of that can happen until we understand what the basics are. Then we can take shortcuts because we felt like if we did a click here and click there and kind of a checklist, a lot of the essence of our standards would be lost. And so I just thought that was really interesting that you brought that up.
I was just going to say, I remember one of the earlier episodes, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, gents, you can too, Bonnie, but I don't know if you listened to it or not.
she sponsors it, yeah.
No,
doesn't listen.
One of the challenges was if your classroom isn't set up to be based on proficiency, to slowly start making that mindset change and think about, is this assignment, is the purpose of this to have them just achieve a finished product?
Yeah, checkbox kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or is it to practice a skill, which we talked about with the IPA? Really, it's about skills. Can they, if they've never seen this word before, they've never heard this person talk, do they have the skills to work around that? And just to slowly start, and for me, my first year, halfway through the year, I just dove in with proficiency only. I was at 88% assessment. The rest was assignments. This year, it's all tests. It's all based on how proficient they are at the end of the term, basically. But just slowly, that was one of the challenges, to slowly find ways to incorporate so it's not that huge of a paradigm shift. And you're not trying to, and hopefully you won't be as defensive. Like you said, Chris, it's easy to be defensive. And I haven't been teaching that long, but I can see and understand why you would defend the way you've been doing it, because, you know, that's the way you've been doing it, and it's worked for you. But if you slowly kind of chip away at that, and then at some point, I think it will click in your head, and you'll be able just to throw the rest away and go right to the proficiency based grading where we know you need to be.
Bonnie, I'm interested in, as you've pursued this with your world language teachers throughout mm-hmm. the district, how you've gone about that to create that culture and at the same time teach and train teachers on the structures of a standards-based mindset.
In a lot of ways, we're really lucky because in world languages, we already know what our proficiency benchmarks are. So we have those, we have that foundation already set, and we know how to measure it. So we know the goal, we know how to measure it to ensure we're there. And so I think that's what makes world languages departments the ideal departments to start with when it comes to standards-based grading or competency-based education. And that's why we're part of the state pilot, because we already know where we're going and how to get there and how to measure it when we're there. But we do get a little disconnect, despite all of those foundational things, from teachers who aren't quite ready yet to teach for proficiency. Because when you teach for discrete knowledge, it can be safer. You know exactly what a right or a wrong answer is. And it's just a way of teaching or a way of running your classroom that has been safe or that you've been doing for a long time. And so to make that switch to something that seems sort of nebulous and scary to grade as proficiency, as the student's ability to speak on a variety of topics and not just memorize 30 items of clothing, but to actually talk about what they wear and how that might be affected by their culture, how it sets up their identity, like real world topics that kids are interested in. So that's where I think that's where we're at right now, is most of our teachers absolutely are teaching for proficiency and moving towards grading for proficiency, but there's still some way to go. We have a little progress still to make.
I don't know how you feel about shout outs to other podcasts on your podcast. I'm starting to get into these to make better use of my time, but I listened to one last night from Principal Center Radio. It had Cassandra Erkins on it, who's a nationally known assessment expert. She consults with districts and teachers across the country, and they're talking about instructional agility. And I think what Miles, you said, and Bonnie, you said, is reminded me of that. When we talk about what are we really checking for? What do we want students to do? If it's discrete knowledge where it's safe and we're comfortable assessing right and wrong, we're not very agile. We're not really taking kids to where they need to go. They're not learning what they need to learn. We're measuring abstract and discrete and separate mm-hmm. knowledge that doesn't really necessarily do them any good. But if we're not just looking for task completion, but we've designed the task or designed the learning experience for a purpose, for a learning purpose, and then that's what we're measuring, the progress along the way toward meeting that purpose, we have to learn to be agile. We have to learn to be able to diagnose throughout a class. And I've been in all your classes, I believe, and I've seen that very well, where you're not just checking to see if a student is with you and up to speed. You're checking to see, are they making progress toward what I wanted them to do in this activity? Are they learning language skills? Are they able to converse? Are they able to have dialogue? And that's a difference. And we see it more and more in education, but we still have some room to improve in being instructionally agile. And it probably comes pretty natural to you, but I think that goes right along with competency-based grading, is mm-hmm. we have to learn to be agile and diagnose and change and adjust pacing and differentiate with what kids need. And those are all wonderful buzzwords, but you four are teachers that do it well.
Helps that we're all on the same page, and we have differing opinions sometimes when it comes to rubrics, and you know, we're not the same teachers. My Spanish classes look very, very different than Roger's Spanish classes. But as we mentioned before, we have the same standards and we're in the same direction. We can have different activities, because that doesn't matter. As long as we're measuring against the same standards, we're holding the students to the same can-do statements or whatever we're trying to get them to accomplish. As long as that's the same within the classroom, how you get them there, you can still bring your own personality. It's not going to be a threat to your teaching style or your personality. We're talking about a structure that's in place, and then you use it how it best fits your students' needs.
You just described what a functional team is, what a professional mm-hmm. learning community is that.
It makes all the difference. I see it all the time, what the things that happen in a school where there's a strong department that works together cohesively, and they each get to have their own personalities and strengths and weaknesses shine, and actually that actually improves the team. It really does make all the difference in a world language department, and I'm sure other departments as well.
You know, the guys all probably get sick of me, but not a day goes by where I don't go in. When we have when Roger and Brandon and I have the same preps, where I go in and ask them questions about what about this and what do you think about this grading change? Or we were just yesterday talking about how to show more but not include more on the grades. And Devin, I'm sorry that you don't have the same prep with us. We don't try to. But not a day goes by at lunch prep time. We're just talking about and just having random discussions. Which is where we had the idea for the podcast, really, I think. I don't know. That just these discussions about proficiency and grading and how do we teach and what about this activity. And
okay, so let's talk about assessment. With competency-based education, we talked about grades a lot of times can be arbitrary. I get students from, I think, 6 or 7 different teachers. And most of the time, the students are great. Those teachers are doing everything, a lot of proficiency-based stuff. But I still need to understand where those students are. And their grade doesn't tell me that, even if it's an A, a B, or whatever. So we are using an assessment to measure, and we're using the IPA, the interpretive mode, the interpersonal, and the presentational. So we're checking their skills across 3 different modes. And that IPA tells me more where they are with the language, so I know how to help them, as Chris said, I know how to help them grow and move on to the next step, whatever that is. But we want to talk about assessment in general because oftentimes assessments have a very negative connotation, especially in the United States, because you always hear we test our kids to death, or our kids spend more time testing than they do learning. You hear those kind of comments. But assessments are a necessary tool. And right now I'm talking specifically a summative assessment, an all-encompassing, like, what is everything that you learned? Can you demonstrate it across the board like this? And then that's very necessary. Whether we use external assessments like the STAMP that we mentioned, ACT, AP tests, things like that, or whether we have assessments within the school district or within our school. For us, that'd be our integrated performance assessment. But let's talk about how the role of assessment in a competency-based system.
That's hard to say. Role. I think that's everything. Assessment is.
Oh, sorry. Did I steal?
Is everything in a competency-based structure? Because what you want to do is you want to be able to measure what the students can actually do. So how well can they interpret the language in reading or listening? How well can they speak it? How well can they write it? And what's great about grading based on standards is that kids get as many opportunities as they need to be able to demonstrate their competencies. It's not a one-time shot and you're done. We give those kids numerous times to be able to do it. And it may take some kids longer than others to acquire different aspects of the language, but they can all do it and they can all get there. So it doesn't really matter at what point in the term they get there, but we want to see that they can all reach our goals by the end of the year. And our proficiency standards in world language are such that they're high enough to challenge kids, but they're something that's doable for all students, even knowing that kids acquire languages at different rates. So we definitely need to be really involved in accurately assessing those skills, because that's how we're going to do our grading. That's how the kids demonstrate what they can do. So for me, that's everything.
How did at the actual training that you and I went to in Nashville, how did they phrase what an assessment, the IPA assessment was?
They said it's not a stop sign or a dead end where it's like, okay, learning is done. What have we learned?
Right.
It's a yield sign where you go, you pause for a moment and look around to see where you are before continuing. And I loved that because the more we learned, like the IPA, it's not just a test for testing's sake. It's a learning tool. And what I love is as we've done our district IPAs and IPAs just in our classroom, the students learn a lot. And it's awesome. They retain the things that they learn in this what could be felt as a high stakes type assessment. They learn a lot and it sticks with them. And then they can use that going forward. So it's not just, we're done. This is it. Now show me what you can do. It's, you know, where are we and where can we go from here? And it's just been great for me.
We just had a great experience with that in class today. We did the, interpersonal part of our IPA for one of my classes when we ran out of time the other day before we could finish. Anyway, we did that. And then the very last question on the level 3 test was pretty challenging in German. And anyway, so a lot of them didn't answer it real well, the final question. But after everyone was done and completed the test, I put the tests away and then had everyone put everything away. And then we just went back and listened to the audio after they'd already tested it. And we broke it down and there were so many like ahas and like, oh, I realize what he's saying now. And so then I played some other audio after that that was totally new to them. And they heard like the same things. And it was just like that. It stuck with them. And
they developed a skill of listening instead of paying attention to specific.
Like in the test, they're still exercising and learning and growing. So anyway, just today, that was great. And actually, those are the, like, if you want those moments as a teacher that are the exciting moments where kids are really learning and having ahas, the assessments are like the funnest part to do that on. Like when you review an assessment and then you know, the kids have already done it. They know what it is and they had their go at it. And then you come back together and say, well, let's look at what really happened here. And they realize where they messed up and they said, oh, I got that part right. I knew what he was saying or whatever. Anyway, that's a really fun part. And if we're always assessing and we can always use those assessments after they've tried it, then we come back and say, hey, this is what really happened. That's just a really enjoyable part of teaching, I think. So the fact that we're assessing all the time, if we use it right, it can really be fun and really, like, it really energized the class today. Seriously, it really energized the class to be able to go back through together and talk about it and have people try to shout out ahead of time what they thought it was. And so it works.
It would be so nice to have students not be afraid of the test. There's an automatic fear and everything that goes with, oh, it's test day.
Groans.
Yeah, groans and complaining and I'm going to fail and my life is terrible. And where we're coming with this IPA and competency-based type education, I hope that we can really change the conversation. And like, this is something that we do every day. I'm just using it to measure really where we are so I can adjust my teaching and you know what you have to do. So I'm hoping that we can change the conversation about assessment.
That's a culture thing, and Bonnie described it, is when students know that they have multiple opportunities to get it right and that we're learning along the way, that changes for them, and they get excited. They're more willing to own what they're doing and own their learning and be critical of their own progress in learning when they know they have time and support to learn, even if it takes them a little longer than another student. Traditionally, we've given a test and that was it and you moved on and you either did good or you didn't do good. Well, my apologies for the poor use of the English language, but that was it. And you felt like if I didn't do this on time or I didn't turn this on time, I have no shot. That's it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And so there's still that lingering part of our educational culture where if you didn't do it when the teacher wanted you to do it, then you're out of luck. And that leads to groans on test day, I think, as opposed to the, we're always learning, we're always assessing, we're always yielding and seeing where we're at, we're evaluating what we're doing, and that's fun. Learning is fun. Real, genuine learning is fun. And when kids recognize that and feel that their teacher is facilitating that, even if they don't articulate it that way, they respond well.
No, that's the perfect example of teaching to proficiency. We are all language teachers, we understand what you were trying to say, and any everyday occurrence, people use good and well incorrectly all the time. Drive safe instead of drive safely, right? Mm-hmm. We know what you're trying to say. Your point gets across, and proficiency is all about that. With a world language, can you get your point across?
No, I see that in this school, particularly when I go down the halls or in your classrooms, and there's signs that encourage students to have a growth mindset. So you're celebrating mistakes and errors and you encourage the kids to do that. That's a big part of when you can get the kids to have a growth mindset and understand that that is actually required for learning. You have to stumble in order to learn, especially in acquiring a language. There's no other way to do it. And the same is true for teachers. When we move to this standards-based grading and competency-based education, we need our teachers to demonstrate that same growth mindset. Because no, we're not all there right now. And yes, it is going to be a struggle and we're going to make mistakes and we're not going to be perfect on the first IPA or the second IPA and probably never, but we're always going to be working on it and learning and growing. But what's important is, are we doing what's right for students? And do students understand proficiency well enough to own, like Principal Kime said, to own their language acquisition and know that it's a process.
Yeah, I am assuming this goes for a lot of teachers out there, whether you teach proficiency or not, but there's that phrase, it's okay if you fail, it's not okay if you don't try. And we talked about teachers, we should not be held accountable to being perfect. We're fallible as anybody. But that same saying you use to motivate your students should be the same for teachers. It's okay if you fail. It's not okay if you don't try.
Talking about culture within education in general, students are going to follow the teachers. So it has to start with the teacher. As Bonnie mentioned, and also as Chris, it's interesting to me how often we teach our students or try to teach our students, you need to adapt to change. You need to learn these skills because you don't know what life's going to throw at you. And then something gets thrown at teachers and it's like, no, I'm not changing. No, I'm not. And it's like, okay, we have an interesting level of hypocrisy. We tell our students, stay off your phones and stay with me. And then in a training, we're all on our phones, right?
Yeah. So I was going to say, ask Principal Kime.
And that double standard drives us nuts, really. Yeah. It should.
Yeah.
I've never really had that problem before.
Really?
Well, you mentioned Bonnie's bio that her dad was an educator. Mm-hmm. Right. My parents were both educators, and something my dad said to me at some point along the way has stuck with me. Leadership sets the tone. And I think that's what you're speaking to when we try to establish a culture where we can improve our grading and assessment practices to help kids really learn. The teacher is the leader in the classroom. We're all leaders. We set the tone with how that works, and kids will see through it. If we're not really like that in our learning opportunities, they're just going to sense it. They're going to know.
And they'll do what we really push them to do. I mean, there's always going to be challenges, but we have to have more faith in our students that they will, if we change the culture and we're diligent, I guess I should say, and really pushing the learning and the growth, they'll come along. I mean, they might moan and groan and complain still because, I mean, they're teenagers. They're still just wanting to hang out with friends, right?
Adults do that too.
Yeah, it's kind of a human thing. Everybody just wants to have fun, but they'll do it. I remember my first 2 years teaching. I remember having moments, unfortunately, where I was like, no, my kids, they're just not going to do that, so I won't. And now I'm like, they're going to do – you know, if I set the tone, if I set the expectation and I teach them right, at least teach them what they need to do, they'll do it. They'll follow the teacher.
Yeah, they're much more malleable than we are as adults.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm still not quite an adult, but they're much more malleable and willing to change. And also, as we present these new ideas and these new to us ideas, they've been proficiency grading and teaching has been around for a while, but as you present these things to them, and as you, for example, the placement at the end of the year based on their assessment, and I know all of you guys have asked your students about this, and they understand the logic behind it. They appreciate the idea that we're looking out for them and not trying to advance them on just because you were here, but we're advancing you when we feel like you would succeed at the next level. Students are much more logical and much more malleable than we are, and we need to give them credit for that and just be willing to push them and see what they can do, not hold them back by not allowing them to push themselves.
I don't think any of us received any pushback when we discussed competency-based education with them and what our
With our students. I was amazed at the two periods that I really talked to the students about, hey, we're placing students based off of how well you're doing and where we think you're going to succeed the most and really where the most learning and growth is going to occur. We're going to place you. Most students were like, that makes sense. I think that's how education really should be. I don't want to go to a class that's too hard for me because I don't have the foundation yet and things like that. So you have that real conversation with students. They understand and they'll accept like, yeah, that's good. I like that.
I had a few questions about credit and things like that, which is another discussion, but other than that, like it totally makes sense to them. And my mind is pretty simple. Here's just another little analogy I thought, like the St. George analogy. I used that when I taught math because I said, I don't really care how you do it. As long as I can see your steps and I can kind of see your thinking and you tell me the right answer. Here we don't have as much of a right answer. Language really is more of an art and you have to holistically look at what they're doing rather than like discrete knowledge assessing. But, you know, looking at all the data and even just stories from people that took high school languages 2 decades ago and say, oh, I never really learned anything or didn't remember anything after my class. Well, it's like our task is teaching kids to ride a bike, and it's easy to assess them on, can you tell me where the pedals are and where your feet go? And can you tell me where your hands go and things like that? But then they take that test. And then they go out in the real world and they're asked to ride a bike and they're like, well, I've never been on the bike before. I know where the pedals are. I know where to put my hands. So where we're headed, to me, it seems, and I think the kids are right on board. We want them to get on the bike, put your pencils down, get on the bike, ride around a bit. And the first time you're not going to be very good. And the second time you're not going to be that good. And the third time you'll probably be better and things like that. So that's why we got to continually assess rather than assign discrete knowledge things. You know, we don't want them to sit back and name the parts of the bike. That's important later on, like after the skills acquired and you want to maybe deepen your knowledge about the bicycle itself. But there's just so many things that don't lead to proficiency, the bike riding that we would have assigned in the past that we're trying to avoid now and trying to recognize, well, that's not leading them to the skill of riding the bike. We needed them to get up there and ride with a partner and have them watch each other and then review how we did. And so it's just constant assessment. But anyway, just students, I think, they agree completely with that idea. And when you just build that environment in your class, like this year, I feel like is the first year or my best year at doing that so far. They're right on board and it's easy for them to talk about things and understand. And like the test that we took this week, the IPA, I feel like there was a lot smaller of a jump from what we do every day to this test that's all of a sudden you got to jump on the bike and we've just been talking about where the pedals and the handlebars are, to, hey, I've been on this bike before. We can see how I'm doing right now. And that's what it felt like. And you know, and I use a lot of like just my personalities to use like extreme exaggeration, like, oh, what if we fail this part? And then I'll say, well, you know, he'll probably expel you. And you'll be out of school. You got to be careful with like who you're
not supposed
with.
To use sarcasm.
But for the most part, yeah, I make sure that they know that the things like that. But you build an environment of assessment is what we do all the time. And your assessment is just every once in a while, I'm going to officially look at what we do when we're doing what we do every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes me think of there's one thing I can do in the world that I'm proficient at, and that's skiing, shockingly. But I've never taken a test on the parts of a ski or a binding, never yeah. studied up on that. I've just always skied. And I remember one day I was skiing up at, I think it was Powder Mountain with my dad, and I was about 8. And I skied up to my dad, and it was the end of the day, and I said to him, Dad, I didn't fall all day. And I was so proud of myself. And he said to me, if you didn't fall all day, you're not skiing hard enough. I was, for a minute, I was so deflated. It's like he totally did not recognize. But he was right. I had just been skiing where it was safe and worrying about not falling. So I didn't progress that day at all. And so my dad always pushed me like that, to always like go for it. But I think our kids in language acquisition are a lot that same way. Do we grade based on how perfect they did something? Do we recognize them? Oh, you did that so perfectly, no errors. Or are we encouraging them to fall down? And not just encouraging them, but kind of pushing them that way to do it, because that's when they're going to grow. That's when they're going to really thrive and make the mistakes that are necessary in order to acquire a language. And so I think that's a pretty important thing to do, is to
that's
celebrate
exactly
that.
Exactly what I tell my students right around assessment time is, because they get into, regardless of the level, even level ones, they get into that set, I know these phrases, I'm just going to use these phrases over and over again, it's going to look great, it's going to be wonderful. And I'll tell them almost that exact same thing. If there are not mistakes, if there's not a part of this where you sit in your head, you think, I did not know how to do this, but I did it anyway, then you're not progressing. You're not pushing yourself enough. You're not trying.
Right. And on the IPA, sometimes you're going to get a word or a phrase or a topic that your students haven't studied yet. Maybe they did not memorize that vocabulary before. That's not the point of an IPA. An IPA is to take them to a place that they may not have ever been before, but to see what they can do with their skills. So I think that's something we often think about when we think of the IPA. It is not a performance test. It's a proficiency test. So yeah, it's going to be a little scary sometimes.
Is it Vygotsky? It's Vygotsky's zone of proximal development, the things that students can do independently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the things that they can't do, they can do with assistance, and then the things they can't do. The edge of the things they can't do between there and the things they can do independently is that zone where we're trying to get them. We want them to be able to respond in unpredictable situations like you described on the, mm-hmm. on the IPA and see how they do. And if they don't do it well, it's okay. Part of the standards-based grading discussion that is inherent with it, but I worry that we don't point out enough, is the growth part. Because we're talking about how kids need to feel comfortable when they don't get it right. They need to know they're going to have multiple chances. Well, at some point, we have grading periods. We have defined grading periods. And we're going to give grades. And those grades should be a reflection of their learning. Well, what if they didn't meet the standard? Does a kid who doesn't meet the standard, are they doomed to a very poor grade? Well, we have to consider the growth part. Because we get kids where we get them. And we can't control that. And we want to vertically align and place them correctly so we can minimize those concerns. But kids come where they come. But from where they were at the beginning to how they grew at the end should be reflected in their grade. A team decides that, and you talk about that. I'm not saying that needs to be this grade or that grade, but it should inspire confidence in the student that they can do it. Look at all that I've done to grow. Look at what I did in this class, in this environment. Look what, you know, the teacher helped me do, but I did it. And that's an important part. Sometimes we focus on the standard. The standard must be met. Standards-based grading. You didn't meet the standard. No. What we're talking about here is fleshing that out and needs to be highlighted and emphasized in our discussions about standards-based grading, that growth is an important part of that standards-based grading mindset.
Yeah, which is another argument for the IPA, because without the IPA, we get a student in our classrooms. We have no idea what they could do before. We only see an A, B, C, or D, if we even see that, really. So we don't know where they're coming from. And so what we can do with this IPA is we can track students' progress. We can know where they were at the end of last year and where they're going now, so we can differentiate properly. We can help them grow from where they're at. And so that's another big plus to having this. That goes right back to where you and that teacher first decided we need to start teaching for proficiency.
Because
this letter grade isn't telling me anything. And I don't know where this kid's at or where he can go from here. But yeah, students all acquire language differently.
So let's talk about the competency-based education pilot that we are doing with the state. We'll go into a little bit of detail about where we are now and where we hope to go in the future. I'll give you a brief overview how this really started. As I said earlier, Roger and I have been here a few years, and we teach Spanish, so he gets some of my kids, and we get students from a lot of different schools. And a lot of students will come, and naturally they'll flow from level 1 to level 2, level 3. Most students, this flow just fine. Some students maybe can skip a level. Maybe the proficiency, they've mastered the proficiency, or they become proficient according to standards, and we can move them along according to their learning. Some students may need to repeat a course, repeat a level. And there are various reasons for that. A lot of reasons why students learn. But we do have to look at it as a reflection on the student. We have to look at it on as a reflection of the teacher, and what are we going to do to help those students grow and learn, regardless if they retake the course or if they go on to the next level or if they've skipped a level. Whatever it is, we need to focus on that student. So Roger and I, over the years, as we get these students transitioning from junior high to high school, which is a pretty big jump anyway, but just focusing on the foreign language context of it, they come to my class. I can go look up what their grade was, but that doesn't tell me anything. And so I know nothing about this student except their name. And it was taking, you know, it takes a good month to 2 months to really, really know where that student is. I mean, you can know things immediately, but to have a full, at least it was taking me a good month to 2 months to have a full picture of where that student was. And by then we're a term into the year. And so I finally, last year, I went to Roger and I said, hey, we've got to have that placement test we've talked about. And Roger's like, well, text Bonnie, see what happens. And so texted Bonnie and I've regretted it ever since. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
We had a response within 5 minutes.
Bonnie came that day.
Can I come in a half an hour and bring lunch? Yes, you can.
So Bonnie jumped right on, has been a great support, and we've moved towards putting those kids where they're going to learn and grow the most. That's the focus. That way we can really understand from the IPA This is where you're coming from. This is where you are. I know where to take you now as a teacher, as an educator. And here are the standards that we've used. If we all use those same standards to measure, that's the idea of our placement. And it's become a state pilot to help see what competency-based education will look like and maybe how are we going to handle it in the future. But I'm going to turn the time to Bonnie because she's more the expert in that than we are.
Can I clarify one thing real quick?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So last year we had an end-of-year IPA, which was a north end of the district pilot, where mm-hmm. schools had the option to take that data and place students. Mm-hmm. Not sure who else did, but we did. And
at least the higher levels.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to place a lot in the lower levels.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely loving what I'm seeing in my classes. And now we've moved on to a state pilot, and we'll let Bonnie talk about that.
So shortly after you guys contacted me and wanted to start this IPA to come up with an assessment that we could use for placement and just standardize what's happening in the North End, which I think is important. So as soon as you came to me with that, I went to Assistant Superintendent Pam Park about it. I went to my supervisor about it, and there were a lot of discussions going on in the district, and it wasn't long after that that we got an email from the State Office of Education saying that they were going to be starting a pilot on proficiency-based education, which they've later changed to competency-based. That's just the verbiage they've chosen to use. And would Davis District like to participate in that pilot? And so because everyone in the district knew that we were already going that direction, and in truth, we've been going this direction for many years with all of our assessments and how we track it with data, and we see where the kids are. And so we've already been really on this pathway. We just haven't been doing placement with it like that yet. So they said, would you like to join this pilot as part of the district team? And so it just seemed like a great opportunity for us, because if we can work with the state on things like course numbering or course coding, that would be a big benefit for us, because I think we're going to have to create a lot of changed mindsets as we go any farther on this. So how do we grade? That's a big thing. Do we do letter grades continue to work in this scenario? And another thing is we're going to think about how about changing our course names and course coding, because maybe our course name should reflect what the course does rather than Spanish 1, Spanish 2, Spanish 3, which doesn't mean very much. Maybe we need to change it to novice Spanish or intermediate Spanish or something that reflects the proficiency level of the class, so the kids understand, and the parents do too, that at the end of this level, you're going to be expected to be intermediate mid, because this is intermediate mid Spanish. So I think that needs to be something we look at the state level, and with their help and their support, and we'll be going around the country to see model programs that are doing these things. Hopefully that'll make the transition easier, that we have support and research behind what we're doing. Does that answer your question?
It seems really fortuitous, just that the way things fell down, it's kind of, in my hands, kind of incredible. I feel like there had to be something behind the scenes, like communications happening, but it's just kind of interesting that it just
Forefront. Yeah. That's what it is.
And it just means that people are of the same mindset. And when that happens, I mean, let's bring it together and see what can happen. And it's not a bad direction. It's a good idea. So clearly multiple heads had the same concept. Mm-hmm. So
another thing that happened last year, so right about the same time as Fairfield Junior High wanted to go to standards-based grading in their entire world languages department. And so at the start of the year, they sent a letter to home to parents, and they had a parent meeting night, and they asked me to speak. And when I got there that night, there were a lot of parents there, probably about 100, which is a pretty good turnout for just foreign language parents. And also two school board members were there as well. And one of them is in my neighborhood. And so I mistakenly thought she was there for her children, but she said, no, a parent called me and was concerned about what y'all are up to. And so I've come to participate in tonight's meeting. So then I was a little bit nervous, I got to say. And so the meeting went like you might expect. the teachers explained what we're doing with standards-based grading, how the students will be able to retake assessments until they can demonstrate it. But it really does change the culture and mindset for parents, because before they wanted their students to have an A. And how can you get an A? Well, you turn in all of your assignments. And then if you're not quite there yet, you do some extra credit. So getting an A seemed easy and a path they could take. And when you change the grading process, then it can be a little scary. And so we tried to explain that A's are still absolutely possible. And our standards or what we expect the kids to do isn't out of anyone's realm, no matter what their speed of language acquisition is. And they can just keep trying and trying to do it. So to demonstrate proficiency, I should say. So we did have quite a bit of pushback at that meeting. There was a lot of nervous parents, and we just calmly and tried to professionally just continue saying the message over and over again. And by the end of the meeting, some of the parents even stayed after and continued to talk with us, and it went really well. By the end of the night, the parents understood what we were doing. We had no more concerns. I'm sure there have been incidences since then when little things come up with the parents and the teachers, but the school board members were supportive of what we were doing. The parents understood, even if they might not have liked it 100%, they understood why and the importance of it and that it's best for kids. So it sometimes seems like there's little pieces of a puzzle that start to fall in place, like it did for your IPA, that we then have the opportunity to take advantage of and really run with it. And that's what we did here.
I think you answered that this last statement about what do we do or what do we need to be aware of in order for this paradigm shift to be implemented as painlessly as possible is the focus on student learning. And if we're communicating through that lens and helping parents and students to see that, they'll respond like you've described. Your students have responded. It's about the learning. Mm-hmm. The grade is a part of it and all those things. And it isn't going to be painless. You have mm-hmm. to work at communicating and refine how we do it as teams. But the focus is learning. And nobody, even if they disagree with how we're going about it, nobody can dispute that that's what we should be about.
I think oftentimes, I think about parent-teacher conferences, like my first or second year, parents will ask, so, you know, how are they doing? And I would explain proficiency because I was trained that way where I went to college, but I still had that very traditional approach. Well, they didn't hand this assignment in, they get that in, their grade will go up. It's still that very traditional. But I did find myself at times explaining assignments or something to parents and being like, I know the purpose of that assignment, but now that I'm talking about it to the parent, it really doesn't measure much. Whereas now where we've moved to this, especially last year and this year, we've moved to proficiency-based grading. We've moved to competency-based type education. My conversations with parents is it's a lot easier. I mean, I can really explain this is exactly where your student is. Here's how I know that. Here's where that student needs to go. Once that conversation has happened with the parent, there's still questions, and sometimes parents are still not fully on board with it or they have a lot of doubts. But most of the time they can see it's like, okay, I actually have a better picture of how my student is doing in your class because of that data, because of all that information now that I'm getting. It just makes that conversation a lot easier because there's just more concrete knowledge of what I have, how I can talk about that student.
And you throw in, here's how I'm going to help your student. They're at ease saying, okay, this teacher knows where my student is, and I know they're going to help my student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've always thought was funny is the most heated parents I've ever had to interact with, by the time it's all said and done, they come out being my advocate because they see exactly what the intent of everything is and at a minimum what we're trying to do. And, you know, I mean, to what extent I fulfill what I'm trying to do, that, I mean, that's debatable, but the intent is there at least is where they've come out on my side, and that's been really great.
I was just going to throw out a little side note. We were just talking to one of our special ed teachers here before the podcast, and he was asking us about our new grading and how we're doing that, and that's just an angle that hadn't even occurred to me yet, that they check in on general education classes frequently to kind of determine if a student needs special education services. And to be able, you know, he was saying to be able to look into a list of assignments or things like that, or, you know, look into their list of assignments on Encore, our grading system, or Canvas or something online, that they use that a lot and it to determine and have data to support their decision to put a kid in special ed services. So I don't know. That's just another thing that could really help them is if we, I don't know, this is just a big thought that we had right before the podcast, but just the naming of classes and how we're grading and how that shows up in the grade book that they can see so that they can say, okay, this student should be at this level, but they continually score here. Then that might be a problem, might be a placement problem, or that might be more evidence for them to add to other things to say, yeah, this is a thing. But anyway, the special ed angle is another one that hadn't even occurred to me because I don't look at those things very often myself. Just another question really fast for Bonnie. Do we have like a hard end time for this pilot, or is there a time where they're going to sit down and say, it's time to decide what to do? Do you know?
I don't know. I think it's right now slated to be a 2-year project, and we attended some meetings at the state when school first started, and there's school board members and some principals there and me. I think Chris was there. Were you at the state capitol for that meeting? Well, we all showed up at the state capitol with districts around the state who are wanting to participate as well. And they outlined what competency-based education is and talked about some key schools. And I think we'll go from there. So we're going to go on visits to see where they're doing this successfully. And then we'll come and we'll talk about where we go from here, what we need to make the changes in the state. And I don't know that there is an end mark. I think we're thinking right now that there's going to be 2 years at least of work, but there's going to need to be some changes that are systemic that need to happen. And so that's probably going to be an ongoing thing as we make this change, because we have created this culture where we grade based on assignments and tasks and things that may not have anything to do with proficiency or competency. And we've done that for decades. Now we need to change the direction of this great big ship that we've set sail. And it's going to take some time to make those changes. But I think we're doing really well and we're on the way. But we need to remember that same thing. This is going to be a ongoing project, and not to get too discouraged when we have some rough sailing, but we can do it.
Hopefully next week we'll have, this might be a question for him, we'll have Superintendent Nui on. But whereas a state-run pilot, we've been talking about it here where we've been working on the IPA assessment and getting those administered and getting those sent out, the possibility of being able to do that stamp test where that level 4 and above take, can we get level 3s included in that? Because, you know, that we wouldn't have to worry about creating the assessment for them and having the teachers have to grade the assessment. It's all done out, you know.
Having an external tool.
Exactly. And it's
great. New set of eyes, new material to really measure that.
And I don't know if you would know offhand, Bonnie, how likely that could be, or if that would be more of a question for.
Well, the stamp test is an investment for sure. And we currently are investing in it for our level 4 or 5 AP students. We also do it for our DLI students at the secondary level and our Chinese students. We use some Chinese grant money for it for the Chinese, but it's an investment we've made. And it's really easy to create and rate an assessment for level 1 students. We know they're going to be novice mid at the end of the year. Yep. About 99% of all students in Davis District reach novice mid at the end of year 1. Probably about 30% actually reach novice high. And I think that would be a better goal, but we're not going to change right now. We also know that about 80%, 85% of our students at the end of level 2 reach novice high, which is our goal for that year. So I'm not really concerned at this time about having a big cash outlay for those levels 1 and 2, because it's easy to create and rate novice work. I would like to change to add it for level 3, because as those kids move up into the intermediate proficiency, the proficiency pyramid broadens so much there and their skills start to really fragment. And so you see more separation of kids' abilities and it gets really hard to grade and rate, because also as they move into the intermediate levels, it's really messy. And so sometimes we mistake messiness for errors or not having a proficiency level. And really what it is a sign they are at that proficiency level. They are moving up because it is messy. So I would love to add it at the level three. There's probably going to have to be some funding that is looked at. One thing I would like to consider is in the Davis School District, a lot of our world language teachers take advantage of class fees. So class fees, a lot of foreign language departments charge a $20 class fee for the students, and it's just a general fee on the schedule. It's not a specific world language one, but they use it as general. And that would be great if we could just use a class fee to pay for the stamp tests. And so I would like to do that. I think that student fees is a possibility, as is principals, asking principals to help pay for it. If we continued to pay for the other ones, would principals be willing to pay for the level three? It's a really great indicator also of how well they are prepared for the AP test, if they should be going on. And some students don't understand they are acquiring the language. And so that's a solid measurement. You're acquiring the language and you should continue on, because nothing motivates like success.
Right. And also with the syllabi literacy that we've started doing, that gives them that opportunity as well. So it's not just for four and above, but the threes then have that. So
yeah, and the level three classes that do it, especially in junior highs, we're always able to identify kids that should go on to AP the very next year. And that would have never happened before. We've never picked people up out of ninth grade and say, you make sure you're in AP next year. But now, because of the stamp testing, we're able to see kids every time, probably three or four per school, that say, hey, you're ready for the AP AP class next year.
Yeah, I've got two of them, and they're right where they should be, hanging with the seniors in AP class, and it is awesome.
So what a better use of an assessment than that, to show kids how great they are and that they need to go on in their college material. So they should take a college-level class next year.
This be a good time or appropriate to tease the possible appearance of David Bong?
Oh, that's right. So we've invited David and Sheila Bong from Avant Assessment, who will be in the state of Utah next week, to join us for a podcast. So they've agreed to come on. So that's super exciting.
It's perfect timing, really.
High rollers coming.
We might have to get more than just
world language celebrities.
Gas breaks and candy bars.
Okay. I'll find out if they like water or Diet Coke or something.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. As we've talked about competency-based education and in the pilot that we're doing, and the discussion that we're having about focusing on student learning. And the main thing we want everybody to take away from this episode is we're not going with a new fad or anything like that. We are focusing on the student growth and student learning. That's our entire focus with trying this, to see how can we best help our students, because overall, that's the whole reason that we're in the classroom. That's our job as educators. It's the whole reason you're in there, is to help the student learning to grow. So we hope you will join us in our future podcast episodes, as this is a huge topic, and we'll be sure to talk about it more in the future. And with that, I will say adios.
Auf Wiedersehen.
A plus.
Hasta luego.
Au revoir.
We thank Bonnie Flint and Chris Keim for being on this podcast, and thanks for getting down with Level Up.
Speaking of our IPAs, I got to apologize for the German one. A couple of things, like it says, your mentor teacher.
Don't do it.
Daniel.
Don't apologize.
Well,
we're not apologizing.
I'm fake apologizing. I'm fine apologizing.
I'm cutting this out, just so you know.
Don't cut this out.
Oh.
This must be in the final audition.
Is it level two?
I think it was level two, where it says, like, Daniel, your mentor teacher from Austria wants to talk to you on the phone or something like that.
And then it goes to
and
the
then
menu.
And it says, like, yeah, well, there's that part too. But then the actual, like, written out general conversation thing that we showed them. And it says, tell Jose to do this, whatever.
That happened to everybody. It's not just German.
Oops. Like, what happened to Daniel?
He changed his name to Jose.
You can do that.
Learning moment.